Welcome to Quick Brain, bite-sized brain hacks for busy people who want to learn faster and achieve more. I'm your coach, Jim Quick.
Free your mind.
Let's imagine if we could access 100% of our brain's capacity.
I wasn't high, wasn't wired, just clear. I knew what I needed to do and how to do it.
I know Kung Fu.
Show me.
Welcome back, Quick Brains. I am your host and your brain coach, Jim Quick. Our guest today is Tal Ben-Shahar, a pioneering positive psychologist. He's going to be debunking the myth that success alone brings happiness and going to offer a refreshingly realistic path to becoming whole again. He is the co-founder and chief learning officer of the Happiness Studies Academy and Potential Life. And he also designed and launched the world's first master's degree in happiness studies. Whether you're navigating a challenging phase or simply seeking a deeper sense of fulfillment, this episode promises to equip you with actionable strategies for finding meaning, nurturing your mind, fostering supportive relationships, and embracing all your emotions. The keys to inviting authentic happiness into your life. Tal, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So let's start with happiness. There's so much literature about happiness online. It's obviously one of the desired state. Everybody wants to be happy. How do you define happiness? Why don't we start there?
Yes. So, there are probably 8 billion different definitions of happiness.
Yes.
The way I define it is that happiness is a combination of 5 elements, which are spiritual well-being, physical well-being, intellectual well-being, relational well-being, and finally, emotional well-being.
And this is the acronym you have called SPIRE.
SPIRE, because I know it helps memory to have acronyms,
it does.
Right?
I love the mnemonics, absolutely.
And, you know, spiritual well-being is about, of course, can be derived through religion, but it's mostly about finding a sense of meaning and purpose in life. It's about being mindful and present. Physical well-being is about exercise and nutrition and recovery. Intellectual well-being is about curiosity, asking questions. It's about deep learning. Relational well-being, number one predictor of happiness, quality time we spend with people we care about and who care about us. And finally, emotional well-being is about learning to deal with painful emotions, accepting, embracing them, and then, of course, cultivating pleasurable emotions like joy, like gratitude, like love.
Wow. What are some of the myths in your research that you found that maybe people don't realize that this is maybe a lie or something that's a non-truth in this field?
Yes. So there are actually a few of them. And unfortunately, these myths, because they're not based on reality, are barriers
to happiness.
So one of them, you know, we just indirectly discussed, which is that happiness is about an unbroken chain of positive emotions.
Okay.
That to really be happy, you have to be happy all the time. And that's a misnomer. You know,
I don't know anybody who's happy all the time.
Well, yeah, I often tell my students, you know, there are 2 kinds of people who do not experience painful emotions, such as sadness or anger or frustration or anxiety. 2 kinds of people, psychopaths and the dead.
Okay.
So if you experience any one of these emotions, it's actually a good sign.
Yes.
You're not a psychopath and you're alive. And yet most people do not give themselves the permission to experience the full range of human emotions. And the paradox is that when we reject or try to reject a painful emotion, it intensifies. Mm-hmm. So if I tell myself, you know, you shouldn't be sad, you're the happiness professor, immediately the sadness skyrockets.
Interesting.
Or if I say to myself, you shouldn't experience envy towards a friend, you should be better than that, immediately the envy goes up. And paradoxically, when I allow these emotions to simply flow naturally through me, they leave just as they came. They don't overstay their welcome.
That's interesting. We had Susan Cain on the podcast, who wrote Quiet, amongst other things. And we were talking about how sorrow and sadness and certain music that puts you in that state is valuable also as well, to have that spectrum of emotions. In terms of the myths we talked about for happiness, A lot of your work, and I really enjoyed Happier, talks about becoming more anti-fragile, right? Anti-fragility. How does that relate to the research you've done around happiness?
Yes. So I encountered the concept of anti-fragility through the work of Nassim Taleb, who teaches at NYU. And essentially, anti-fragility is what I've come to call more recently resilience 2.0.
Okay.
So let's begin with 1.0. Resilience 1.0, the traditional idea, is that it comes from engineering. So you take certain material and you put pressure or stress on it. If it's resilient, it goes back to its original form. Or a ball, you drop it, it bounces back up to where it was before. That's why we talk about resilient individuals as bouncing back. Anti-fragility, resilience 2.0, takes this a step further. You put pressure on certain material. If it's resilient, it goes back. If it's anti-fragile, resilience 2.0, it actually grows bigger, stronger. Or a ball, you drop it. If it's resilient, it bounces back up. Resilience 2.0, anti-fragility, bounces back higher.
Interesting.
Now, it turns out that there are anti-fragile systems all around us as well as within us. I mean, think, for example, our muscular system. You know, you go to the gym, you stress your muscles. Subsequently, you actually grow stronger, bigger, healthier. Mm-hmm. We're anti-fragile, also psychologically, not just physiologically. You know, we do a lot of work with parents and teachers. And we know that if we prevent children from going through hardship, we're doing them a real disservice. We're actually harming them. So that psychological stress they're put under because of a disagreement they have with a friend or a bad grade in school. These are actually potentially growth experiences. Why? Because psychologically, as physiologically, we're an anti-fragile system. We need to trigger that anti-fragility through some stress, hardship, challenge.
And with that challenge comes change. For me, with my brain injury, I had learning difficulties, but that struggle led to a certain level of strength. For me, I wouldn't change what happened to me with my my accident because I found a mission, I found a strength, I found traits, I got clarity, purpose. Maybe you could talk a little bit about, because we always hear about post-traumatic stress, maybe you could define it for people listening.
The idea of post-traumatic growth was introduced into the psychological literature through the work of Tedeschi and Calhoun. And what they demonstrate through the research is that following trauma, we're actually potentially twice as likely to experience growth as we are to experience deterioration, potentially.
Wow.
Now, for most people, this potential is not realized. Why? First of all, because most people are not even aware of the possibility of growth. And it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if following a traumatic experience, I think, well, my only option, the only road open to me now is deterioration that is likely to happen. But if the notion of the possibility is present, I'm much more likely to grow. And second, there are also certain conditions that we can put in place to significantly increase the likelihood, not guarantee, but increase the likelihood that we will actually grow from the hardship, from the challenge, even from the trauma.
Wow. What are some of those conditions?
So many of these conditions actually align with the spire elements. Mm-hmm. So if we find a sense of meaning and purpose, that's spiritual well-being, we're more likely to grow from hardship. You know, Nietzsche wrote 150 years ago, when you have a what for, every how becomes possible. So when you have a sense of meaning and purpose, mission, then you're much more likely to overcome hardships that are in your way. Meditation, being present, is an accelerator of growth. Physical exercise, you know, in the West, we find it very difficult to see. So how is physical exercise connected to psychological growth or to creativity? Well, it very much is, because physical toughness is connected to mental toughness. Two sides of the same system. Then you
doing hard things, or even when you exercise, you know, those, you think about the neurotransmitters of dopamine, serotonin, endorphins, it could increase your mood.
Exactly. You become neuroplasticity increases as a result. And neurogenesis, we're more likely to generate new neurons as a result of exercise. That's an accelerator of growth, of psychological growth. Expressing gratitude, so changing the mindset from, blame to appreciation. That is also an important antecedent of psychological growth.
Yeah, from gratitude, the ripple effect, what you appreciate tends to appreciate in our life also. This is fascinating because this is almost a formula. What I'm thinking about is not just bouncing back, but bouncing forward in your life and having that growth.
Yeah, exactly right. And the difference between sadness and depression is that depression is sadness without hope.
Interesting.
And what simply understanding the concept of post-traumatic growth or anti-fragility does is it provides us with hope because we all experience these challenges and hardships and sometimes traumatic experiences. And if we know that there is the potential of growth, that in and of itself gives us hope.
And so I think just even the awareness of people listening or watching this opens up the potentiality for them to, even though it's possible.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people feel like the adversity they went through, it's kind of fixed and this is the meaning that they have around it and it doesn't mean anything else. But then this is giving people more freedom or more options and more agency also as well.
Exactly. That is, they become active agents rather than passive victims. Because you see it, what is a challenge or what is a hardship or even a trauma? It's a point. And from that point, a fork emerges. And we have much more choice than we think we do. Yes, sometimes events are very hard, difficult, and life changing, and not in a positive way. But so
we're not mitigating the suffering that people are having, but it's just showing them that there are all these other choice points that these difficult times, they could distract us, these difficult times can diminish us, or these difficult times, they could develop us. We could have a choice of, does this make you bitter or does it make you, better, in fact?
Yeah, Jim, growing up, I very often heard the phrase that things happen for the best. And I must say, I never connected to it. As a child, I still don't. What do you mean things happen for the best? The war happening right now for the best. I mean, there are innocent people dying, COVID for the best.
Right.
But while I don't think that things necessarily happen for the best, I know that we can choose to make the best of things that happen.
I like that.
And, things happen for the best is, passive and I would argue detached optimism. Making the best of things that happened, that's grounded optimism.
Grounded optimism. And what I love about your book, Happier, is it's very practical, in terms of not only is it insightful and inspiring with the examples that you have, maybe we could give, besides everyone listening, getting a copy of the book and gifting their friends and family with the gift of the potentiality for more happiness, what's for our listeners, maybe one thing that they could put into play to have more happiness in their life?
So with your permission, I'll talk about a few. But before I give these, tips or techniques, remember that even if you take one of them and you apply them consistently, you apply that one tip consistently, it will make a big difference in your life. So
little by little becomes a lot.
Exactly. Small changes make a big difference when consistently applied. So physical exercise, movement is, I often tell my students, if I don't exercise at least 3 times a week, and I exercise 5 times a week, but if I don't do it at least 3 times a week, I feel a significant drop in my well-being. Yeah. It doesn't matter what goes on, inside and the thoughts that I create and develop and the gratitude, I still need my fix of exercise. So regular physical exercise, at least 3 times a week, 30 minutes each time.
Yeah, it's interesting, Veronica, executive assistant, we were just talking about on Friday, she has this time, this window where she dedicates to dance. Mm. Right. And so many people, they don't schedule this time. Yeah. And then they wonder at the end of the day how they didn't make time for the things that matter.
Yeah. And unless we schedule it, it's unlikely to happen. Yeah. Not in our modern, crazy, busy world. So it has to become a ritual. Mm. We have to introduce it at, you know, specific times, ideally, whether, you know, it's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, this hour, or, you know, when I wake up in the morning, you know, first thing, we need to schedule these things.
And not just like doing CrossFit or Pilates, certain activities. You and I were talking before we started recording, squash, right? Yeah. We talk about racket sports being good for the brain. Dance.
Dance is terrific. You know, dance because you're moving. Mm-hmm. Often you're doing it with someone else. So there's the social element, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's in a group or in a duo. And also it's movement in different directions. Yeah. So there is variety and diversity in our brains, as you know, loves that.
And music, and, right? The music affects our mood also as well.
Of course. And speaking of music, or focus in general, you know, meditation, that's huge for happiness, for anti-fragility. And again, it doesn't have to be, you know, if I can't do 1 hour a day, then I may as well not do it.
Right.
5 minutes a day. You know, mm-hmm. just deep breathing, slow, gentle breathing can go a long way in, you know, resetting
the system. And it helps to reduce the stress, because chronic stress, we know from research, actually shrinks your brain. But just getting that little break, that reprieve of quiet time for yourself. And some people say, well, I don't have 5-10 minutes. If you don't have 5 or 10 minutes, then you probably should take 30 minutes if you're exactly so that right. you're that busy and that's, stressed.
That's exactly right. Another thing that's very helpful for happiness is taking time aside for other people. So, you know, I see so often now in restaurants or, you know, kids hanging out and they have their phone with them. Yeah. And that's really unfortunate. Again, the number one predictor of happiness and the reason why we see such a decline in mental health levels in our youth and adult population is primarily because of the addiction to technology and foregoing real, tangible, face-to-face interactions, focused interactions with other people.
I love that, Tal. So many people are listening right now and they want to go deeper with you. Where can they connect with you? What resources do you have? And we'll put everything in the show notes again at jimquick.com/notes. But what are some of the things that people could find you at and learn more?
Yes. Yeah, so the Happiness Studies Academy, we have a year-long certificate program.
Okay.
Where we introduce our participants to our students to practical skills that they can introduce, whether it's at home, whether it's in the workplace, in school, to increase their own and others' levels of happiness. We also have a master's degree, the world's first master's degree in happiness studies, soon to be expanded to a PhD. And we have a lovely course.
PhD in happiness studies. I love this.
And we have a lovely course through Mind Valley.
Social media?
Yeah. So we are on Happiness Studies Academy is on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Amazing. Well, I'm really happy that we had this opportunity to connect. We talked about it a while back. I hope everybody who's listening or watching, they got practical value from this conversation and just even being more aware that this is even possible. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we're so busy in life that we lose touch sometimes with the things that light us up, or we're dimming our happiness because, you know, it's shining into somebody else's eyes or something like that. So I appreciate your time and talent. Thank you for the amazing work that you do and the research and sharing it with our community. And I look forward maybe having you back or maybe adding one of your books to our book club. It would be phenomenal.
Thank you, Jim, for everything that you do.
Thank you, Tal. Everyone, I want to thank you so much for enjoying this episode. We put the and this is a long conversation on the audio. It's always 20 minutes because it's quick. But for the full expanded version, if you're not watching this on YouTube, please go to our YouTube channel. We have over 1.5 million subscribers there, where we put the extended version of our content and so much more. So I wish everybody lots of health, lots of happiness. Until our next episode, be limitless.